on today's episode of Checkers or Wreckers, I was wrong. We have to address it. My picks were probably the worst picks in all of history. We talk about Erik Jones out, Seabell in, Chase and Blaney and the new girlfriend theory, breakdown trucks, Xfinity, and Double Cup from Michigan and Road America. Is something wrong with the JGR Alliance model? The NASCAR playoff system, is it broken? And what to watch for at the Daytona Road Course coming up, as well as our picks, and as always, a silly season update. Lock it down, hammer down. Let's go, baby. Today is a very somber day in the history of Checkers or Wreckers because I, Noah Griego, parentheses the nose, is wrong and JP is right. We do not celebrate this around here, Checkers or Wreckers. We do not celebrate JP being right because JP is never supposed to be right. I am the greatest at NASCAR and JP sucks. So with that, now that I've gotten all my anger out, go ahead, JP, lay it on me.
I don't see how one individual could be so wrong. I really don't. Look at this race. We knew Harvick was going to be good. You gave him no credit. I don't even have my notes with me right now of what your picks were. I know you do. I know you're dying to get into him. But no love for Harvick, man, none. And I went ahead and cashed in on that. The only pick I got wrong, and it wasn't by much, was picking Sheldon Creed in the trucks. Otherwise, I got the other three races. I got the winner correct there. And mind you, Sheldon Creed, and everybody can argue with this on Noah, he was running very, very well until the end of the race and was ended up finishing 30th. So obviously wrecked out, had major issues there. Would have loved to seen had he not had major issues. Man, if I could have gone 4-for-4, I don't know how you'd ever recover from that. But I'm not going to get used Cindric. To it, though. Yep.
So you pick Cindric. Just to review, you pick Cindric, or first Sheldon Creed, Cindric at Road America, and then you went Harvick double time, which I went, fuck you, because I didn't believe it was going to happen. I honestly did not think that Harvick was going to win back-to-back. But I guess sometimes we all got to eat some crow sometimes. And this will never happen again. This feels like Tim Tebow crying after the loss to Ole Miss, talking about, I promise this will never happen again. I promise this. Nobody will ever work harder than me. Nobody will work harder than Noah the Nose Griego at picking NASCAR. And I will never lose again. All my followers out there, I'm very, very, very sorry. And since this has happened, my life has changed a lot. I actually fled to Charlotte, North Carolina to escape the wrath of Dega Davey. Whenever he watched it, because he was at Real Work, and I got a text in all caps saying how right he was, and I just went ahead and turned on Do Not Disturb. I didn't want to hear it anymore. This is a very sad day. It's like that Stephen A. Smith meme where he's going, I am having a very bad day. Now, with that being said, I am in Charlotte for the weekend or for the week. And one of the first places I went was to pay respects to LFR. And I was going to take a picture out in front of it and be like, oh, cool, and put it on Instagram. But then when I pulled up, there was a whole bunch of people like packing up boxes. And I was like, oh, God. Some of them are unpacked. It's just poor taste. And I knew how small it was, but Cecilia was like, this thing's so small. And I said, all right, I'll go ahead and put my dick back in my pants.
Nothing. That's what she always tells you. Nothing new there.
All right, let's get to some news. So after we stopped recording, the next day, Erik Jones out. And then quickly after that, Seabell in. And we all knew it, but Spire officially announces the purchase of LFR. Now they're going to two teams with both their charters. So they're going to have the 77 and then an unnumbered car for now. But I did not expect them to name Seabell that quick. I thought they were going to maybe shop around a little bit just to create some stir. But Daddy Joe Gibbs does not play around. He went ahead and dumped him. And Erik Jones's lawyer and agent is saying that there is high possibility he's going to get a ride within the next few days. But then they're also saying no timetable. And I'm like, I don't know what he's trying to do here. But I don't know where Erik Jones fits into silly season, honestly. I had the 95, honestly, in my back of my mind, staying with Bell for another season just to give Erik Jones another chance. But I don't know where he fits into all this.
I'm surprised that Christopher Bell wasn't announced sooner, because we all knew it. We all knew it. It was not a surprise. They could have held out for 2 or 3 months, and we all would have known the day Erik Jones was not going to be reinstated for next year at JGR. We all knew it was going to be Christopher Bell. So I don't know why they took, you know, week and a half to get that figured out. I mean, it was already Pac or something, if not mistaken, had kind of alluded to it the day it happened as part of the report. With Erik Jones heading out. No big surprise there. You're right about Erik Jones. With Erik Jones, I'm very conflicted here. He's been with the top-tier team for quite a while, doesn't have a lot to show for. But initially, I thought his career was done. You know, he's not going to have another – not going to win another race with another team, not going to have – eat or remotely even a shot at winning a championship. But the back of my head – screams Joey Logano and what happened with him. So I don't know what to think right now. I could see Erik Jones going to Spire Motorsports and being like the next Daniel Suarez, where you end up having this great equipment, you don't do anything. Erik Jones more so than Daniel Suarez, because he's been with JGR for so many years and has had that equipment for so long. But at the same time, I could also see him going to Chip Ganassi. And if Bubba Wallace joins Chip Ganassi, which again, that's part of the silly season results, that team is going to have a lot of money. He could even go up to Hendrick. You know, Hendrick could bring him to the 48 car. They have sponsorship, you know, so it's one of those things where will they take him in and will he thrive there? So, but my take on it is right there with you. I have no clue what to expect, when to expect it, where he's going. But one thing I do feel pretty confident about, he won't be shit for at least 2 years. And when he is shit, he will not be a championship contender. Calling it right now.
Okay, so we have more rumor mill out of Bubba, out of the Bubba News or RPM. There are some like random accounts out there saying that a unnamed driver is trying to get a 50% stake in RPM, and that will be the only way that Bubba stays. And I cannot think even of a driver, active or not, that is looking to buy half a team, and that Bubba Wallace will respect that person enough to want to stay there. Like, Jeff Gordon is already involved over at Hendrick, I assume. Jimmy Johnson, Dale Jr., I'm thinking about the guys like with the big money. I don't know who else could be wanting to be out there to do this. Or like an IndyCar driver. I have no idea. But at the same time, Bubba said that there was a big deal in the works in his interview post-race. So I just don't know. There's a lot of rumors swirling around, and I hope this gets done. I almost bought a 124 diecast Air Force car for Bubba for 2020 on eBay today. Then I stopped myself because I really don't want a 43 car that's like having like a last year's jersey if he's on a different team. Like, I'm going to wait for him to return back to 43 before I do all that. But what do you think about all those rumors, Bubba? Like, it's such a strange thing.
I don't know the validity of those announcements, that stuff. No one of real relevancy is talking about it right now, at least yet.
We're talking about it.
Yeah. Look, it doesn't make sense to me. There's a very, very short list of drivers that would have that kind of, you know, big dick money that we'll call it here to go.
Who's half a driver? Team.
There's three or four that I could think of right now. Jimmy Johnson, Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch, and Matt Kenseth. Those are probably
Kyle Larson.
No.
Whoa.
I don't think he's worth that much. So, and one of the things too, we don't even really know what the value is of RPM. You know, I went on to Google today to kind of mess around and see what's the value of Richard Petty Motorsports. And the first results are Richard Petty himself. I'm like, I don't care about that. I want the team. And one of the numbers I pulled, and again, I have no clue the accuracy of this, but it said 30 million. So, you know, if we speculate that 50% of RPM is $15 to $20 million, I would instantly assume that anyone worth less than 50 million is not going to be looking at that. That's just such a huge sum of salary to do that. But it's, I mean, man, it's just rumors for now. And I don't know what they're trying to do. If they're trying to add some, you know, excitement to it that doesn't need to be there. But it's one of those things, I think it's better just to let it wait it out. Don't make any assumptions on it and see what ends up happening.
For the record, I think Bubba going to the 42 is not a good idea. And I think that he can build, when you, like we were talking about a couple weeks ago, when you think the 43 now, you think Bubba. He's built that brand. And so to abandon that brand and go jump ship, I don't know if it's that good idea. But
and he's going to take all the sponsors with him too. I mean, it's one of those things where once he leaves, it's one thing for him to leave, but to leave and take the money with him, which he will with the sponsors, it's be crushing.
Unless you have like a big time driver coming in, like a Kyle. Hey, Kyle Busch could buy the team. Hey, you got money. Could. All right. But to finish off the initial thoughts here, JP and I have had this theory that, or I think I've said this before, where once you get a girlfriend in NASCAR, that's going to slow you down. It's like Jessica Simpson with Tony Romo. Dale Jr. got a new girlfriend with Amy back when we first started dating her. He lost. He didn't win in like 143 starts, something like that. And then Chasen Blaney, new girlfriend alert. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. New Hooters girls. I don't know what's distracting him. Chase hasn't done better. He even said that there's something off. And yep. Then Blaney, there's just bad luck ever since he started talking to this girl. I mean, you're the one who said about this pussy theory.
I didn't. Well, yeah. But after you brought up initially a couple weeks back, and I called bullshit. I said, look, nah, pussy ain't gonna get in the way. It has nothing to do with nothing. We're like four races past that now. And I'm starting to reconsider. Because the Fords are doing fine. You know, the Chevys for the most part, Chevys in general haven't done that well. Ooh. But Chase I didn't mention. I mean,
doing that
in an interview today, you know, something's not right, something just feels off. I don't know. And I mean, let's look at Tiger Woods. Take away the pussy. And he tanked. Jesus. He tanked. So I don't know. That's the only part of me that's thinking, all right, maybe. Maybe it all is a coincidence. I don't know. Maybe it's bad tracks. Now, will the Daytona Road Course be any indication of the pussy theory? No, of course not. Absolutely not. No way. But, so but Dover in the 500, yeah, or 400, sure.
Is this going to be like Darrell Waltrip's vortex theory, where anecdotal evidence outweighs any scientific evidence there ever is?
I know, because it's not anecdotal. It is evidence. I disagree. I think you're implying that it has no grounding, no basis. I say it does have base. It does have grounding. Look at the scoreboard. There's your grounding.
We got to talk Michigan Road America. First off, the trucks. I'm going to go ahead and open up. I know I always open up. But Johnny Sauter is the biggest fucking cuck on the truck series. I sat right in front of whenever he pushed, so I forgot who he pushed down the line, but he went blocked somebody below the line. I think it was, yeah, Spencer Boyd blocked him below the line at Talladega. And then he was talking about, you got to play with NASCAR's ball. They're going to shove the stick right up your ass sideways. And everybody's like, yeah, cool. But Johnny Sauter trying to beat out Grant Enfinger, his own teammate on the inside, and then just spinning himself around. Like, dude, obviously you weren't going to get there. I never thought that Johnny Sauter was going to get there.
No, and there was so much more time left. This wasn't a last lap thing.
It's like 18 laps to go.
Yeah, if it was the last lap, I get it. You know, you're doing what you got to do to win. You're already in a must-win situation. I get it. Do what you got to do. but he was pushing the ball way too soon, and he's lucky he didn't take out his teammate with him. That would have been extremely catastrophic. But I don't understand what he's doing, and it seems like a lot of instances where he has supposed bad luck or a bad finish, it has virtually everything to do with him and his decisions. It's whether he's pushing too hard, makes a bad choice. I don't know. He's just a cuck. That's what I can describe it.
Look, neither of us are the president of his fan club. I personally do not like, he's my least favorite driver on the circuit, because I like whenever there's old guys in the truck series, but not failed Cup Series guys in the truck series. Matt Crafton really has only made like 2 starts in the Cup Series, and he really hasn't made that many starts in the Xfinity Series either. I'm talking about like guys that just like racing trucks, and they look like they race trucks too. So, but Johnny Sauter, he sucked in the Cup Series. Like, he absolutely sucked. Like, he was like way back in the pack all the time, and then he just didn't really contend for wins. And then now he's down there. He got relegated down to the Truck Series. I think he won the 2016 championship, if I'm not mistaken. So I just don't like him. Every time he races, I'm like, he's almost like Kyle Busch, the way he just like blames everybody else. I'm like, no, Johnny, no, this was you. I don't know what you're doing. Like, and he's also like pretty fucking ugly. So that doesn't help either.
I agree. He reminds me of the Kyle Busch of the Truck Series. The only exception, though, is that he's not as relevant as Kyle Busch is, and we don't see as much of him because of that.
He's not that good.
Exactly.
But talking about looks here, hey, Zane Smith. Oh, you know what? Hold on. Before we get to Zane Smith, I totally forgot. Grant Infinger needs to stop clearing himself on the restarts. All right. That really pissed me off whenever he decided to just spin across everyone else's way on the restarts. That, I just don't understand why you'd want to clear yourself at Michigan going to turn one.
Yeah, if you want me, especially with an outside lane, there's no rush. But I agree.
But so getting back to now, going back to the beautiful man that won, is, hey, I thought I knew what Zane Smith looked like before he got out of the car. Then he got out of the car and I was like, whoa, we just got, I'm like, Chase Elliott better watch out.
I'm like, who is this kid? And dude, that Southern twang accent. Oh my God. And an honest kid. Zane Smith in the trucks that we've watched this entire year, never done anything to piss anybody off. Good kid, put himself in a good position, and seeing how grateful he was for the opportunity. You know, I hate undeserved cockiness. And he is the furthest thing from that. You know, that's why I'm so big on Matt DiBenedetto, Corey LaJoie, Bubba Wallace. You know, these guys don't have this, and Zane Smith with this. You know, these guys have earned their way here. He made in his interview, poster interview, made the comment, this sport relies a lot about money, which I didn't come from. And he put himself in position, and It was just really, it's really cool to see guys like that. You know, it's one thing when it's a driver's son, you know, who's made a name for himself and is put in that position because, you know, it's his daddy's name. Zane Smith doesn't come from that. And he put himself there, got the win. I really hope he continues to progress because, man, he's real easy on the eyes.
Well, he's very easy to sell just because he's an attractive dude. I mean, I'm not a guy that likes guys, but hey, I game recognized game. But I love whenever I can relate to a driver. Now, I like Chase Elliott because he's from Georgia. I'm from Georgia for the most part. And Chase Briscoe worked his way up. Big fan of Tony Stewart. Love Chase Briscoe. Going down in a truck, Zane Smith, one of my favorite drivers. Just because right after that, he huge fan now. Whatever he does, I'm supporting him because I relate to him. I also don't come from money. You also don't come from a lot of money. So it's like we can see ourselves in that and see that the little guys can still win. Like he's not some CEO's son that, oh, I'm going to go out. He's not like a John West Townley where his dad's like the CEO or co-founder of Zaxby's and like just wants to put his kid in a car.
Yep.
And but Zane Smith worked his ass off to get here, and he has some pretty good sponsors like La Paz. He's Cosmopolitan. I forgot who he had on the card this week. It was a different brand, but it's just good to see a small funded guy bringing any money to NASCAR and then outperforming other people. Now I know he has GMS equipment, but still, like, that 21 car has been doing well all year. He was juking and jiving with Kyle Busch at Charlotte. I remember that. And if Kyle Busch wasn't in the race, I think Zane Smith would have won the race. And that just shows with this win at Michigan for him. And I liked the racing at Michigan. I thought it was pretty fun, especially in the trucks. You know, you and I are big fans of the trucks because, first of all, the guys that drive them are funny as hell. Like, they don't give a fuck. Even Johnny Sauter, I think he's still funny sometimes when he says stuff. And these guys, most of them, other than Zane Smith, look like they drive trucks. Like, these guys, like, back road, like, beard, like, do you even have a wife? And if it is a wife, they're like, just, where'd you find it? Like, they look like they smell like Marlboros or, like, some menthols. Like,
when I think of the truck series, I think of, like WWE sometimes with the trucks, because each guy is like, they've been with their equipment. Like, I'm talking about the truck series regulars. They've been there for so long. They're not, you know, there really isn't a silly season with a lot of the guys in the truck series. So it's like, what you see is what you get year after year, and they each have their own personalities. We know Sauter is going to be pushed and be aggressive. We know Crafton's going to be consistent. Infinger's going to be hit or miss. It's fun. It's fun to watch. So that's what I think of. I think of WWE was like, all right, here's this guy, like the Otoro Loco. You know, it's like, oh, it's that guy. Yeah. Like, we all know that guy. That's his personality. That's his shtick. And that's what the trucks kind of feel like to me. And you're right. When I look at Johnny Sauter, we're going to keep on pegging this motherfucker. He does. He looks like a guy that is driving the hauler. Not a very pretty looking hauler. He is the Peterbilt from the movie Cars. That's who he is.
No. He's the guy with the diesel, like, F450 with like a fifth wheel on the back of the hauler, and the hauler's like, beat the hell, looks like a horse trailer. He said, yeah, I got a couple cars in the back, you wanna race them this weekend? Like, what the hell? Where the hell did that thing come from? Like,
Jesus.
And no disrespect to the fifth wheel trailers out there, but God, like, the tires are blown out. Like, you just see the sparks flying. Like, what? There's no blinkers on it, no lights when you're driving. You try to pass somebody and then you just hit their trailer. Like, what the hell? Like, hey, I'll buy you a pack of cigarettes and make it up.
Yes.
All right. Give me some Pall Malls, baby. Mm. But all right, we got to go on to Xfinity. Now, Xfinity was
a shit show. Here.
The main thing I was hearing, other than the rain delays, the main thing I've been hearing about all week so far, like the first part of the week, is how people do not like how long the caution laps were. Now, the damn track is like 4 to 5 miles long. Each caution lap takes just about 7 minutes. So if you have to take anything more than one caution lap, you're like, you're sitting there 20 minutes long. And then on top of Xfinity, on top of that stuff was the modified pit procedures with the pit stops. You could come in there. You could not get gas and tires. You either had to get gas or tires.
Dumb.
Which, okay, I can't wear pants and wear shoes. Seriously, at the same time, I have to wear one or the other. Like, it just doesn't work for me. So, and you had to be like minimum of 60 seconds, maximum of 80. And I understand why they did it, to save the team's money, because they don't have to bring all the, and they also did not have the all-star crews there because they were in Michigan. So I understand why they did it for this race, but going forward, like, there was no race off pit road. There was nothing interesting to watch on pit road. Like, other than like some fat dudes like rolling over the wall and they were changing tires about as fast as Firestone does, which is about an hour long. And you only ask them to rotate your tires and you're like, dude, why are you like balancing them and shit driving down the road for a test drive for 3 hours?
You know, for a track that arguably has the longest caution laps or pace laps, I have never seen so many stalled out cars in a race that just wouldn't start.
It was
of all the tracks it could have been. It couldn't have been Martinsville, couldn't have been Bristol. I mean, shit, even Talladega, it's a big track. It takes a good 2.5-3 minutes for a caution lap. I get it, but what the hell? Every single restart, there was a car in the back of the field that I don't know if it was because they only have one caution lap each time an incident happens, and they can't spend as much time on pit road, which wouldn't make sense because there was no time limit on pit road. They had way more time they would have had before. Cars were getting stuck, and I don't know if guys are purposely sitting there so they wouldn't go a lap down at a road course and be put in the back of the pack. I just – it made my head hurt, man. It's like, all right, fine, let's go back to some racing. Somebody gets stuck. It's like, damn it, guys. It was frustrating.
I know what happened. I know every time, you know who it was every time? Mike Harmon Racing. And you know why they did it? They purposely start out their car so everybody could look at their damn hood where it goes, please stand for the flag. It's like they always have the same sponsor. Now they don't have any other sponsor, so they just put whatever they want on there. But I guarantee you, I think that they just purposely saw it out just to be like, oh, get all the attention. It's like almost faking it. Like, oh, we blew an engine. And they're like, Mike, the engine's fine. They go, oh, we blew it. And they'll just go ahead and just rev it up.
He's being super serial. All right.
Look, dude, Mike Harmon's the fattest dude in NASCAR. He can barely fit in those cars. That's why you had to hire somebody else. But all right, Cintric dominated that race. And I wish AJ Allmendinger would have picked him off at the end. But the dinger got loose at the end, and yep. it was competitive, but it wasn't as competitive as the last road course, which was the Indy road course. So it kind of let me down in that regard, but I also just like the technicality of Road America and them just like flying through the corners and people just almost spinning out every time. But aside from that, Allgaier and Hemric just cannot catch a single break this season. It's like, even though Hemric's on a partial schedule, he just can't. His car cannot stop breaking. And then Allgaier gets wrecked out and then takes Jeffrey Earnhardt with them. So I just feel bad for both of them in this situation.
I agree. As far as unluckiest drivers, the top three choices, you could put Hemric, Stuart Friesen, and Jimmy Johnson. They're all in a deadlock as far as just unluckiest drivers of the year, and just
throw a blanket over them. like Mike Joy says, throw a blanket over those three.
That's right.
But all right. So do you have anything else to talk about Xfinity other than the fact that Cindric dominated, because we got to get to Cup soon.
Yes. Last thing on that, I was really impressed with Chase Briscoe. I thought him winning Indianapolis was kind of, you know, luck, right place, right time, which it kind of was to a degree. But I was impressed with Chase Briscoe. Yeah, able to get an honest third place there. I figured he'd be fourth, fifth, maybe sixth. You know, because we saw what happened in Indianapolis. But I was very, very impressed with him. He might be a threat to watch. Once he gets clicked up to the Cup Series and goes up there, he might be a threat to watch on the road courses. He's very, very consistent.
Going on to Cup 1, the Firekeepers Casino 400 kilometers, 312 miles, whatever. We had the introduction of a new rule, which is choose rule. Now, I know what happened with trucks, but it wasn't as big as the Cup race. So with the choose rule, you have just like Bristol All-Star race, you could choose the top or the bottom once you approach it. And just choosing the top or bottom instead of just lining up off your pit road order or whatever restart you're doing. And then along with that, the choose rule, they also announced the introduction of like a variable measurement percentage, a formula for calculating the new lineups, which I'm okay with. I think that it rewards good performance recently and over the season. So that was also nice. But did you like the choose cone this time, JP? Because last time we didn't get to see it, and Larry Mack was just kind of talking over it.
Yeah, we didn't see anything of it. And with the All-Star race that we saw, I remember seeing guys on pit road. You would see where they come out and like, all right, cool, he's going to be in first, inside row. You're kind of predicting who's going to be where. Then they cut to a commercial break, or they be in the broadcast studio, and we're like, what's going on? And then they come to the green flag, like, whoa, 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 what? Why is he there? Who's that? Whoa, what the hell's going on? It was aggravating, you know, because you're trying to stay as close to the race as you can to see what's developing. It was like, what the hell? Why is so-and-so three spots back? He was like the second car off pit road. You know, what the hell? So the choose cone here at Michigan was awesome. It was one of the coolest things they could have done. Freaking sweet. Love it. I think they should have it at every racetrack. Because at a road course, there's going to be advantages to having going to the first corner. There's going to be advantages on a super speedway to go in high lines, low lines. I don't see why they can't do it at every single track. I wish they would, but I'm happy to have it. I was happy to see it at both Michigan races, and we're going to see it again at Dover and Phoenix. Really cool rule. And also the qualifying thing, the random draw kind of sucked. You know, could you imagine going to a road course that no one's ever been to? And you just won the past two races, and Kevin Harvick, let's say he got randomly drawn for 12th place. That would have been bullshit. He'd be way in the back at a track no one's been at, but he's leading the series, kicking ass. It's like, all right, man, back in 12th, figure it out. I think it's smart. I think it's more fair. It's more consistent, too. You know, it gives guys that that really deserve to be up there to be up there.
About the choose cone for me, I loved it because at the All-Star race, it was way undercovered. But at this one, people were going from, like, I think the farthest I saw back was 6th to 2nd, going from the top of, so from row top of row 3 to bottom of row 1. So I really liked it. I liked that they put it in the driver's hands so the drivers can just stop bitching all the time, being like, oh, if I wouldn't have started on the outside, I would have won. Well, now you get to choose where you want. And then I heard Martin Truex Jr. on SiriusXM talking about, oh, I don't know if I really liked it because it didn't really help me out that much. But then again, he's one who chose where he was going. So I was like, MTJ, what the hell are you talking about? But the biggest question we have from Cup 1, you know, we got to run through these. We got some big driving topics. But did Harvick touch Kyle Busch?
No. Look, anyone who sits there and thinks that in the first Michigan race – that Harvick moved Kyle Busch with physical contact. Did he mess with the air on his left rear quarter panel? Absolutely. Of course he did. That's called racing. But he did not make contact with him. He didn't put him in the wall. And Kyle Busch still finished 5th. So any Kyle Busch fans out there, A, I don't know why you're listening to us, because he fucking sucks and we hate him. And fuck you too for being a fan of his, if you are. But B, if you really think Harvick hit him, you need to go see the eye doctor too. Because on top of being a terrible fan, you're also blind.
I think that Harvick is just covering his ass. I saw the Zoom just like you did. We were standing right next to each other watching it. The NBC it. I think Harvick hit him.
Get the fuck out of here. You are such an asshole. No, he did not. You know damn well. You know damn well. He didn't – like, I know you're colorblind, but I didn't know you were really blind. Come on now.
Dude, I'm not even Rowdy fan. I'm not even, like, Rowdy Nation.
Yes, Harvick, you are. Let me guess. You got a pack of M&Ms you're going to eat after this, aren't you? Definitely.
I told – hey, when I went to the Lino store today in Charlotte, I told the guy I'm going to buy some Kyle Busch cars to go run them over, throw them out on the interstate, let them get flattened. And the guy goes, I like your style, boy. And I said, thank you. So – but I think Harvick touched him. Did he touch him that much?
Did he touch him inappropriately? The answer is no.
No, because he doesn't have Penn State logos on his car. He's got Busch Light Apple. So I think that Kevin Harvick touched him, but I don't – and I think he did it on purpose. And I was so hoping that Kyle Busch hit the wall. But I thought the finish to the first race was fantastic. And you were right about versus one versus two comparing them. About the first race being more exciting. I always think the first one's not going to be as exciting. But when we look comparatively, first race was way more exciting. And a lot of cars went to the backup cars too.
Yeah, and on the restarts, the first one was so much more exciting to me because the restarts. You know, we saw 3 or 4 late race restarts. And every single time it was so much fun to watch as a Harvick fan because I knew, and again, you... My dad were telling me it's, you know, my dad was picking whoever was in the top line behind the lead car, saying, oh, they got the advantage. There's going to be, oh, it's going to be Keselowski. Oh, now it could be Wallace. Oh, now it's going to be Truex. No, it was going to be Harvick figuring out a way to make it work. It may have not happened right in turn 1, he made it work a couple of times in turn one. But what I kept telling you guys, all you guys, is look, just because you might get the advantage in turn one doesn't mean you automatically will hold off Harvick in turns three and four. It doesn't work like that. And he, that's exactly what he proved, whether he pushed you out away from the top line, cut off your line from the bottom line, or just flat out outdrove you when he started in the front on the top line and just took off in his own zip code. He did it every single time. And it showed me that he fair and square won that race. No ifs, ands, or buts. People can bitch and moan that he pushed Kyle Busch out of the way all they want to. Doesn't matter. Does not matter. Because Kyle Busch had the same choose cone rule, so he could have put himself a little bit closer, I'm sure, if he wanted to go to the inside line and make that work. But he didn't. Enough said.
All right, so closing out and going over to Cup Race 2. I'm not mad that Harvick did it. I was celebrating that Harvick did it. But also, I was getting tired of Steve Letarte and Jeff Burton being so surprised that the bottom line worked, because I'm with you. The bottom line at Michigan definitely worked. I don't know what the hell race they're watching where they were saying, oh, look him go to the bottom. You know, Jeff Burton's high-ass voice. Look him go to the bottom. He ain't going to do nothing with that. And then runs right by him.
The truck showed that it worked. The Michigan race showed the bottom line could work the entire broadcast. In the third broadcast, they're still going, who's going to pick the bottom and try to make it work? It's like, it's not a game anymore.
You mean who's going to win the top?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, look, guys, it's not, I mean, look at him and Harvick and Almirola. They were going neck and neck, you know, top, bottom, middle, everything. The only guy that couldn't make the bottom work was Brad Keselowski in the second race. That's it.
All right, so going into Cup Race 2, the Consumers Energy 400, obviously Kevin Harvick won, and Denny Hamlin made it very close at the end, more than I thought it was going to be. Mm. What did you think about Codename Hot Dog for Almirola?
Dumb. it's dumb. I remember watching the broadcast. Everyone's coming down pit road, and I had to see this one car. I mean, he fucking beelined it out of that line.
Darted across the track.
Yes. He was like, it's like he's on the highway and had to take a really mean shit. And he's like, oh, I better do it now. You know? And just zipped out a lot. I'm going, who the hell is that? What are they doing? No.
I got a better one. Someone goes, hold on, there's a Hooters in this egg. Hold on.
Yeah. Oh, baby. So
Twin Peaks right across the street.
Oh, God, yeah. Jesus.
Dude, I thought it was great whenever Steve Letarte goes, you know what's a good code word? Pit, don't pit.
Yes. He goes, look, guys, the code words, and I'm with them. Nobody cares. No one's not going to come to pit road or come to pit road based on what you do. The only time that might weigh into it is what we saw, like the Charlotte race when Chase Elliott,
smooth
brain Alan Gustafson, brought Chase down. Which even then, that's not necessarily it's a strategy call, but they're not deciding anything. They're saying, do we want overtime? Or do we want to take our chance with no overtime? And that's the only scenario I can think of where maybe a code word might work, which even then, if someone's behind, if you're going to be the lead car and you have people in front of you and behind you, what the fuck does it matter? People are going to see what you're doing and you're going to be able to see what they're doing anyway. It's dumb.
I kind of wanted to know what the rest of the code words were. Like, were they relish, hot dog, or no, not hot dog, but relish, mustard, ketchup. I kind of want to know what was going on there. I want to know, was it like bacon bits or was it, you know, just something else? But so other than Harvick really running the shit and coming right back up, I was so pissed when Brad K decided to pull that shit on Blaney. I was so mad. I, like, my jaw literally dropped, because as soon as I saw him go down there like that, I was like, is he going to Johnny Sauter this thing? And then he did, but then he took out Blaney too. Mm-hmm. So I guess he must have heard that he had a new girlfriend. He goes, I better make JP and Noah right. And wrecked him out too.
I agree. I agree. And the thing that immediately came to my mind is here's a guy that had said a year ago with Billy Byron at Daytona, I'm not lifting. Which caused a huge ruckus, which he did not. He stayed true to his word. He did not. So that pissed me off a long time ago. Thinking like, all right, dude, who the hell are you? Who do you think you are? Like, oh, everyone's got to get out of your way because you're coming through. No, dude, fuck you. You know, you're as equally worthless or as valuable, however you want to look at it, as everyone else out there. You're not more important than anybody else. Brack, hey, mind you, a few weeks ago, learn how to drive. If you're going to be in the series, you need to know how to drive. And people who come to the series very easily need to be clicked out of the series just as easily.
He caused a wreck.
And then here, homeboy comes in, not only causes a wreck, but takes out his teammate who happened to be the leader of the race. So... And is also could use another win to cushion, you know, to get him further up and to be more competitive in the playoffs. I mean, he's already locked in. Blaney's already locked in. Not a big deal. Both Brad Kay and Blaney are. So it's not wasn't that big a deal. You know, if it had been Jimmy
Roger
Johnson.
Roger had to be pissed.
Oh, he had to be. And the words of Dale Jarrett, I hope Brad Kay's contract, I hope he used quick drying ink on the contract he signed with Penske. I couldn't agree more. Runs his damn mouth on Quinn Houff, which sort of agree with, but it's come out of Brad Kay's mouth, so I you know, not going to go too crazy there. Then signs a one-year deal with Penske for one-year extension, which I think both were kind of, you know, reluctant to do. And then here we are going to Michigan. Rex himself, his teammate, both of them were fighting for the lead. Both of them easily could have won the race. I don't know what would happen if Harvick could have caught those two guys. Takes them out of the race and ruins their shot at winning the day. Just dumb.
But so like I asked you earlier, I personally don't think that Hamlin was going to catch him. I thought it was way too close at the very end when he dove down. That was pretty close. But dude, you said you thought Denny was going to catch him?
Yes, especially when Harvick got, I believe it was in turn two, Harvick got really loose, had to get out of the gas. Fortunately, Denny Hamlin had his nose so far up Harvick's ass that he did the same exact thing. They were running so close to each other. It's kind of like, you know, when you're on the highway and the car in front of you swerves, you instinctively swerve with them. Even though you don't see anything in front of you or anything, and they have no other reason to do it, you can, hey, follow the leader, find a way to get around them. You know, it's one of those things where you kind of instinctively do what they do. And fortunately, Denny did the same thing. But I was very extremely nervous because while I was at the lap times, Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex Jr. were side drafting like nobody's business on the restart. Which Kevin Harvick desperately needed, by the way. His car was running at 300 degrees, and his engine could have blown up at any second. I don't think people mention that quite as much as they should have, but 300 degrees is awfully, awfully hot when you got 25 some odd laps to go. That's you know, when you cannot afford to let off the gas at Michigan. So seeing after the caution came out, I was like, all right, cool. Harvick's engine's going to cool back down. He's going to do what he always does. He's going to pull back out front. Then I'm like, all right, cool. Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex in second place are side drafting. Harvick's going to gain about a second and a half on him. Fantastic. Race is over. You know, three out of four races, Dega Davey nails it in the bag. Then I look at the lap times, and I see he goes from 1 second down to 0.8, down to 0.7, down to 0.6, 0.5. And I'm like, oh, shit, there's like eight laps to go. And he's closing in like one or two tenths every single lap. He's going to catch him. He's going to catch him. And then he got right up to his bumper. And it was like watching New Hampshire last year. Everyone knows what's about to happen. He's going to do a bump and run, race over. But somehow, some way, Harvick pulled it off, and it was pretty cool to see.
All right, congrats to the Busch Light Apple people. They've marketed it fantastic, but I cannot seem to find any. I've visited every single store where I live in Tallahassee. I've been looking all over Charlotte. You can't find it. So congrats to Harvick, and congrats to you, JP, finally. But got to move on. Got to start going to the future. So if Harvick or Hamlin doesn't win the championship, I think that a lot of people are going to start saying NASCAR is broken. Do I think that? Hell no. Because I think because first of all, I don't like seeing total domination all year. I like seeing people come back from the dead. I want to see I would love to see Austin Dillon in the final four just to be like, for everybody to be like, oh, look how good RCR is.
Shut the fuck up. No, because that's, even if they go into the final four and don't do anything. No, I completely disagree, because then we're going to hear about, well, they were the final four. You know, it's like, we'll hear about that for the next year or two. I just don't have the patience to hear that. I hope he fails.
But do you think is NASCAR playoff system broken? Do we need to have to reinvent the wheel? Kind of like whenever Jimmy Johnson was winning like five straight and everybody's like, we need to change the playoffs because he keeps on kicking everybody's ass. But if they don't win, if this system rewards consistency, those guys are so consistent and neither of them win, is it the fact that they choked or the playoff system is broken?
I think it is broken. It's not going to be based off if neither one of these guys don't win the championship. I do not like the fact that the championship comes down to one race. That is so stupid to me. I don't get that. NASCAR is not a football game. No, you fuck off. It's not a football game. If you're telling me that someone can go out there, win 35 races, but the very last one, they have a Quinn Half incident, and they're not the champion because of that, that is bullshit. That is complete, utter, that I feel like Christian Bale right now in Hard Times, one of the opening scenes where he's like, has a letter in his hand saying that he's been denied from the LAPD, and he goes, this fucks my plan. This is not what I want. These fucking assholes. That's exactly how I feel about this. That's because it's NASCAR again. It's not, there's 40 teams out there that are playing in one race every week, you know, or one event. And there's so many things that can go wrong. And I wish the playoff platform would be best of three, best of four, and have it be road course, short track, super speedway, and a mile and a half. And whoever has the best finishes of those four gets it, you know, as far as overall points go. Now, I get it. I can see fans going, well, someone could already win it and have it in the bag for the last race. Yeah, that's called racing. Show me any other racing sport out there that puts everyone on an even keel going to the last race of the season on purpose. Doesn't exist. NASCAR's the only one.
NASCAR Heat Pro League and iRacing NASCAR Coca-Cola Series.
I stand corrected.
So, all right, I don't think NASCAR's playoff system is broken. I see what you're saying, and it can be an easy fix for you. You can just take out Phoenix, and then the playoff system works for you. Instead of just having a final four, your last round is just your last round. Like your round of eight, you just name it something else. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You can just,
it's tweaking the wheel, not reinventing the wheel.
So I think that I love the drama that goes into the final race. I'm one of those people that, you know, NASCAR is entertainment as just as much as it is sports. So they're there to entertain. They're not there to be like, oh, this is for the technical purists out there. Like, fuck that. No, we are so far gone from the purists of the sports. Like, we're putting restrictor plates on cars when we're trying to see who the fastest car is. So we're long gone from purists. Like, if we're running, and if we want to be like the danger sport, we just put a chicane at Daytona so they didn't have to go 210 into a road course turn. I get it, but also like we're not a pure sport. We're entertainment. So I think the last race caused a lot of drama and a lot more eyes on it, because you're like, this is the last race. It gives a lot of sense of finality to it. Now, if you have somebody locked up to the final race, that final race is not going to be viewed as much. I'm going to guarantee you that. Like, it's just, it's not, because with the sporting events like baseball, if you have like best of seven, you can always come back, but there has to be a game seven. That's why this is the playoffs to me are one giant like best of seven. This is like you win three, and then we get to the final race in Phoenix, and this is all on the line. Something can happen. Yeah, people can get injured in the middle of games too. But I love the drama. And as much as you may say, oh, this doesn't make sense, we need consistency. You can be great throughout the regular season in the NBA, for example, and then you can go out there and shit yourself in the finals and just lose 4-0 and blown your ass out. And then people are going to say, oh, but what about the regular season? The regular season almost doesn't matter for NASCAR as much as the playoffs, and that's what they want it to be. But where we are in the sport is that every race matters because you're going all over the place, and every single lap is almost like overtime. That's the anxiety I feel because like anything can break out, especially at like the bigger course like Talladega or Daytona. And it's like everything's at drama. That's why we're going to Daytona for the final race. But so going on, both Michigan races were about 2 hours. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of like the shorter races for some tracks. Like Michigan, I'm okay with. Texas does not need to be 500 miles.
Mm-mm, nope.
Like Texas, like even Atlanta, like these cookie cutter tracks do not need to be that long. Now, Charlotte has a 600 and the Roval now, so I'm fine with those. Unless you're like doing if it's a longer event, it's Crown Jewel, yes. Daytona 500, yes. Southern 500, yes. But all the other ones need to take a good hard look in the mirror and say, do we need to be that long? Do we need to keep people staring at a screen at Texas of all places for like, 4 hours at Texas? I would just tune in for the last half if I wasn't doing the podcast. And if I wasn't like a real diehard fan, I'd just be like, oh, casually watching a race. I'm not going to watch Texas. It sucks.
No, I'm 100% agreeance. And with Michigan, what we saw is, and we talked about this before, at some of these tracks, especially doubleheaders, I want to see, you know, a little bit longer all-star race. You know, I'm not saying, you know, 50 lap, you know, or 40 lap stage one, 30 lap stage two. No. But I'm saying at max 400 miles, preferably 300 to 350, because it's long enough where you're going to have, you know, strategy still plays into it. There's still a possibility for green flag pit stops, but all these guys who are driving and trying to practice and settle in on the good long run, it's like, no, people don't want to see that. And you just talked about it. It's an entertainment sport. So if NASCAR is all about entertainment, and Denny Hamlin, he alluded to this last year, and he took a lot of flack for it, but he had to correct people. A reporter asked him what he thinks about the length of the races, and he went along the lines of, his response was, well, the most watched event in the Olympics is the, you know what, 100-yard dash, you know, something. It's a 7-second sprint. That's like the most watched thing. And he goes, if that tells anything, there's your answer. So, and I 100% agree. You know, Texas, there's no damn reason I need to be watching a race for 4.5 hours, you know, watch just to see Austin Dillon win. Get the fuck out of here. Come on, man. It's just dumb.
With this new LFR news, and also in consideration with Werner Giroux a couple years ago, do you think that there's something wrong with the JGR Alliance model, seeing that their top two alliance partners have folded in the past 3 years? I know this is not the work of TRD, really. This is like the cost of having an alliance. Because what a JGR does whenever you want the top level alliance is that they lease you their cars and their and some team members and parts, and they basically just send them out to you. You know, and like we heard about this with LFR sale. When Spire Motorsports bought them, they didn't buy any cars because all the cars just got returned straight back to JGR. So do you think that there's something wrong with their alliance model that people keep on dropping like flies? Or do you think that just the sport is changing or what?
I don't know the inner workings. We're just a couple outside fans looking at this.
Well, let's speculate then. Let's stir up some shit.
I'm
going to
go ahead and speculate here. First off, here's what we do know. JGR is the only primary Toyota team in the Cup Series. They are
Gaunt Brothers.
They are the automatic. They are the automatic monopoly. Regardless, if you're with Ford, you could have Stuart Haas and you could have Penske as your big ones. If you're Chevy, you can have Chip Ganassi. You can have Hendrick. You have competition. If you don't like one alliance, well, hey, you have one or two other ones you can possibly work with. But with JGR, that's all you got, man. If you don't want it, your ass is on your own. And that's a lot of money to, you know, to have to do that. We know that. It's not a cheap sport to be in. A lot of guys come and go. So by default, JGR has a monopoly. They control the game. And I believe they are doing that because they don't want to make an alliance car too good. You don't want to see Christopher Bell out there whooping Denny Hamlin's ass. That is not what Coach Gibbs wants to see at all. So I think JGR is saying, yeah, we'll do it, but it's going to be on our terms.
You just reminded me of something. When I just remembered this, Barney Visser, whenever he shut down Furniture Row Racing, said that the cost of the alliance was going up. After they won the championship, I bet Joe Gibbs charged him more. Said, oh, these guys know what's going on. Let's try to knock them down a little bit.
Yeah, that should be my car in the championship.
It's a competitor in them, obviously. And so when Furniture Row was out of the picture in 2018, Martin Truex Jr. went to Joe Gibbs, did not do so well, as good as Kyle Busch, and he won the championship. So that's kind of like shoving the finger to him, saying, yo, fuck you, Alliance people, but in a nice way, because Joe Gibbs is a godly man. But I do think that there's something wrong with that model, because the Chevy models, now you said Chip Ganassi and Hendrick, but it's actually RCR and Hendrick are the ones who make
the engine. Yes, RCR, my bad. I completely forgot about them.
Yeah. Ganassi's on Hendrick engines. Petty is on RCR engines, and JTG Daugherty is on Hendrick, I'm pretty certain. Then LFR was on TRD. Gaunt Brothers are on TRD with very loose to Joe Gibbs, and then with Ford.
And that's why they're still fast. Sport.
Yeah, well, Go Fast with Stuart Haas, and Penske. Well, Wood Brothers is like, Wood Brothers operates out of Penske's garage.
I wouldn't throw Wood Brothers with the Penske. I wouldn't consider that as a comparison.
And then you have Fett Roush, but Roush, everyone is a partner to Roush because Roush and Doug Yates make those engines. Like those engines come from Ford and then Roush. So everybody's under Roush. But then you have like the sub alliances, like I was talking about Go Fast. But what are you looking for at the road course this weekend?
I have no idea. I don't know. That's exactly what I'm looking forward to. Is I have no idea what to expect.
Will they crash in the first lap?
Fuck, man, I don't know. Yes. They had the practice at Roval. They qualified there, and guys still messed up at the Roval. So here's the track that's no practice, no qualifying, most of the guys haven't seen it. And the ones that have were in cars that are different universes as far as the way they handle. Part of me, I was thinking on my ride home from work today, I was thinking like, you know, I don't know if we should expect so much chaos to happen because, you know, these are the best guys in the world with these cars. But then I look at the history of other road courses. I mean, damn it, we saw it at Road America. It was a complete shit show with some of those guys out there. I mean, these are a lot of the guys in Xfinity Series. They've raced on a bajillion times. They do it in the iRacing. They know what to expect, and it's still chaos happens. So early on, yes. Late in the race, no.
What's your over under of caution flags if the line is at 7.5?
Over all day long.
I'm gonna smash the under. I'm thinking that it's gonna get close. Not gonna go over seven. It's not gonna go over seven.
You're starting a trend, a dangerous downward. Your picks are about to be like Kyle Busch's season.
He's not gonna win this season. So, but let me tell you this: what to watch for at the road course? Chaos. As much as we may say these guys are so talented, these boys are going to be in a big old pack going in there, and they're going to get spread out pretty quick because they're going to be separate the men from the boys. I think that people that have ran there recently, like Kyle Busch, Jimmy Johnson, and you know, Chase Briscoe on the Xfinity side and Austin Cindric, I think that they have a huge advantage. Now, they're like, some people are like, oh, they'll figure out the course as they go. Yeah, you're gonna figure out the course almost too late. But I do think that this is going to be a place where we can even out the standings. We have some people looking outside the bubble right now that would love to be inside. Like Erik Jones would love to be in there. Tyler Reddick, Jimmy Johnson, Bubba Wallace, Christopher Bell, even Ricky Stenhouse Jr., like these lower guys. Hey, Daniel Suarez is one hell of a road racer. Let's see if Gaunt Brothers, because this is not really all about aero. This is not about balance. This is about how well you can race. So I think it's going to be under on that. But going into the who's definitely not winning this weekend.
With this, and this, I'm going off the playoff bubble here. I'm looking at guys who are in right now, but will not have a good week or a good weekend here at Daytona for the Cup Series. Clint Bowyer, he's sitting
at
13th right now in the playoffs. So he's kind of teasing the cutoff line a little bit. But look, Clint Bowyer ain't no road course racer. That's not his shtick. You know, he's like a mile and a half every now and then to a super speedway guy, you know, because like super speedway, it's kind of anyone's ball game. Just don't wreck out. So I don't think he's going to have a good weekend. He's going to be really teetering the cutoff line. That's God forbid he wrecks out. If he wrecks out, it's not going to be a good day for him. So he's the big one. And then Billy Byron. Again, he's in right now. He's one spot. You know, Matty D is his only buffer, who we know is very, very, very good at road courses. And he actually has decent equipment now. So one of the first road courses here for Matty D with decent equipment. So I'm extremely excited to see what he can do with that. But again, these two guys, they're going to fuck around. And they might see themselves outside the playoff picture going into Sunday evening.
The guys that are in so who's definitely not winning this weekend for me is going to be a big fat William Byron. He's not winning this weekend at all. I also agree with you. Clint Bowyer's not winning. And I do not think that Michael McDowell is going to win. Every time I talk to anybody about road course, I hear Michael McDowell is a good road course racer. I'm sure he is, but he's not fucking winning this race.
No.
Like Michael McDowell is one of my least favorite underfunded drivers. Like I can pick anybody else underfunded. I would rather have anybody in that car other than him.
His crew chief, Drew Blickendick, is by far my least favorite crew chief.
He has a punchable face.
Yes, he looks like a freaking shark. He has a little shark face and a bad haircut for an old guy. Drew Blickendick, you're not fucking 19 years old. Get a grown man's haircut.
What, he's 43 or something like that?
Yeah.
Whatever. Fuck. I don't even care about his age. I'm gonna go with 43 years old. We need to go into picks. JP, give me truck picks. Give me your main and give me your dark horse.
Trucks. I want Matt Crafton. It's going to take experience. It's going to take knowing your car, knowing what you need out of your car at the road course. So give me Matt Crafton. It's consistency is what we're looking for here. And experience on top of that. Who you got for trucks, Noah?
I am going for Ty Majeski.
Bold.
Regular.
Bold.
Because he does a lot of iRacing, so he knows his track
probably. So does Billy Byron.
I'm talking about truck.
Bad theory.
Look, there's a lot of experience if you can get any sort of experience. I know there's some ringers in there this time, but I don't trust him. I think Ty Majeski has a good shot at winning this race, and my dark horse pick is going to be Christian Eckes in the number 18 KBM Toyota.
God, dude, you are going to be 0-2, man. A KBM, 2-second snippet. KBM has got to be in utter panic mode with his trucks right now. Dude has three top-tier equipment trucks. They ain't doing jack shit this year. To hell with that team.
Yeah, Cobblers won some races with them.
Yep. Good thing they count.
Xfinity picks. I think Allmendinger is going to take the W, and I think the underdog pick, dark horse pick, is Alex LeBay because he already got 7 laps of practice on there. That's what I think.
Okay.
He knows the track.
No, you're wrong, because that wasn't him out there. Come on. That's what he said.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He wasn't driving the car.
It was a ghost. So
I didn't drive an Xfinity car. Just made it look just like it.
So with Daytona, assuming there's no rain, and look, to my knowledge, the Daytona road course doesn't have freaking sand traps, like gravel traps where it's like a golf ball, you know, rolls into and just stops. And you have to, like, get a tow truck and drag your ass out.
Oh, like at Road America?
Yes. It was awful. So with this one, because of that, I don't think we're going to see – look, Austin Cindric got kind of lucky because he was towards the front, and I believe it was 15 caution laps, if I'm not mistaken, out of a 45-lap race. So a lot of that race was guaranteed, and there was no race off pit roads. So he had a big security blanket working with him. Going into Daytona, I agree with you, man. AJ Allmendinger, he's the road course champion. He's going to have a lot of time, a lot more time on his hands, because we're not going to see as many caution laps. We're going to see probably the same amount of cautions, but it's not going to take 5 years to drag guys out of there. We're not going to see that quite as much. And we're also going to have pit road strategy too. Because all the top tier guys are going to be there. So give me Dinger on that. As far as a guy to look out for, this is tough. I think Ross Chastain is going to come through. He did really, really good at Indianapolis. Was running with the top, with the boys there. Again, was beating and banging. Ended up going to Chase Briscoe. We didn't see too much of him at Road America. I think there was too many variables that affected that. I don't think we really saw the best of the best at Road America. It was just kind of battle of attrition. Who's going to maintain the position and who cannot slide off the track? Not who has the most talent. But going into Daytona, give me Ross Chastain. Look out for him.
All right, JP, cup picks. Who is your cup pick?
So, I don't have the qualifying. I know Harvick's going to be out front. He's not going to maintain. The Harvick train is not going to be – it's not going to continue into the road course. Matt DiBenedetto and Eric Almirola are going to be the two big guys to look out for. Those guys are fantastic at road courses. A part of me really wants to choose Martin Truex Jr., but I feel like everything that's going on, something's just not right with the 19 camp. He's up there, but he cannot seal the deal. And if it's a short track, give me Truex all day long. But at the road courses, I know he won Sonoma last time we went there. Always has good runnings at these road courses. But I just don't think it's going to be his time to shine yet. Maybe later on in the season, as we enter the playoff races, but not yet. It's not going to be at Daytona.
I am appalled that you would just say that, where you said if you're choosing short tracks, pick Martin Truex Jr. Martin Truex Jr. is notoriously bad at short tracks. He didn't win one until like his 14th year in the Cup Series. So
doesn't matter. Richmond last year in Martinsville. Exactly. He has him out of nowhere. He's got good at him. And he's good there. He's hot, man. He's hot there.
What I'm saying is that if you're thinking Martin Truex Jr., you are usually thinking mile and a half, not, short track ringer.
No.
Right? No, it's mile and a half.
You're wrong.
That's literally, when I think of Truex, I know.
Look at his fucking wins. In the past 2 years, look at his wins. They are short tracks. That's what they are.
It's majority mile and a half.
Doesn't matter. I'm talking about unique.
Unique?
We only go to short track a year? Only
wins mile and a half. I know you're not going to argue with me like the little closing minutes of this show. You're not going to die on this hill because he literally only wins on mile and a half, and then sometimes.
Well, we go back to Martinsville. You're going to be eating your own fucking words again.
I mean, he'd be eating the W because I'm not going to pick him at a fucking short track.
All right, who you got winning then? Fuck.
At Daytona?
Yes.
Road course?
No, we're talking about Dover.
Matthew DiBenedetto.
Don't call him Matthew. Call him Matt. Don't be a cuck.
Matty D.
Thank you.
Guido.
DiBenedetto. Here we go.
Hey, he asked us to call us Guido before the All-Star race last year, so I listened to him. He's on Reddit, and I'm on Reddit, so fuck it, why not? And my dark horse pick is going to be Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy has ran this event 8 times, and he has finished second overall at the Rolex in 2008. So he has extensive knowledge of this track. He does very well on Rovals, to the exception of whenever he wrecked out Martin Truex Jr. at the line. I think that he has a real shot at this. In the DiBenedetto road course ringer to me, I think that he is a huge, understated road course ringer. So, I mean, are you going to argue with me about that, bitch boy?
No. No, I can't.
Exactly. Get off your fucking high horse, all right? Come down from Statsland to racingreference.info and get into reality where Martin Truex Jr. fucking sucks at short tracks. But, all right. We got the Harlers loaded up going down to Daytona Road Course. I'm looking forward, we are both looking forward to a big weekend of chaos, confusion, and maybe even rain. Who knows? But on the horizon, we have Dover, double Dover, and we have it doubled over. It's only double. All right. We have, after this race, we have 3 races left in the regular season. I will personally be going to Daytona for that last race, and I'll be reporting from it. Now, JP, say goodbye to your friends. Thank you for another good show, JP. And thank you for still listening across the Eastern Seaboard. And to that one person in India, I have to say thank you for listening, man.